but be a part of the solution. Be a part of making things different. Be an activist in your own right. Thank you for joining me on Law of the Land. Thank you, Michael G., for juggling so much. And I'll see you, each and every one of you, on the radio.
It's a new day, it's a new life for me, and I'm feeling good. Dragonfly out in the sun, you know what I mean, don't you know?
And you're tuned to 99.5 FM WBAI and WBAI.org on the web. It's 10:01. Coming up next, Clearing the Fog. Please stay tuned.
Saying when they think you cannot hear, if you understood what they do, if for you it was so clear, if you knew they shut down the factory in an economic ruse, if you could kiss the cheek of the child in the sweatshop that made your shoes. Every time we went to war to fight our evil foes, they told you we were really fighting for the good of CEOs. If you could feel the hunger of the many, see the riches of the few, if they told it like it is, what if you knew?
You're listening to Clearing the Fog, Speaking Truth to Expose the Forces of Greed on Pacifica Radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. I'm Margaret Flowers. So this week I wanted to bring you excerpts of an online national rally that was held on Saturday, February 5th. And this was a part of a weekend of actions to say stop war with Russia over Ukraine that was called by 12 major national and international peace organizations the week prior to that. On the Sunday, that call was put out, and people responded tremendously. There were actions throughout the week. There were about 70 actions on Saturday, and more actions and webinars Sunday and going forward. And so this is a really important time because of the escalation of aggression by the U.S. government toward Russia and the amount of misinformation in the corporate media. We're being lied into another war. The whole, you know, quote unquote, Russia has troops on its border is equivalent to the Saddam Hussein has WMDs that lied us into a disastrous war with Iraq. And so a lot of peace organizations, after the 12 major organizations put out the call, more than 200 organizations signed on to that. Almost 1,000 people signed a petition to the president and to the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, calling on them to resolve this conflict, you know, in compliance with international law, using the United Nations Security Council, rather than what the United States is doing, you know, using NATO to perform its war, which is how the U.S. Engages in all of these illegal wars, bypassing international law. The organizations, of course, called for stopping the war with Russia, but also not sending weapons to Ukraine or to Europe in general that are targeting Russia, de-escalating the threats of nuclear war and respecting international law. So I'll bring you some excerpts of some of the speakers from that rally. And if you want to find out more information about actions and sign the petition, you can do that at popularresistance.org. If you go to the main page, the homepage of the website, you'll see it in the slider at the top of the page, or you can go directly using the link popularresistance.org/no war with Russia, all one word, popularresistance.org/no war with Russia. So I'll start out with talking about the COVID-19 pandemic, as I usually do. The United States has now passed 78 million documented cases of COVID-19 and more than 926,000 deaths. This is according to worldometer.info. What's interesting, that the daily cases are starting to fall. Hospitalizations are starting to fall, although we have to remember that the cases are still much higher than they were in previous peaks. The deaths are still high. And now, you know, actually, and this is typical because there's a lag between the time that people start coming down or being, you know, diagnosed with COVID-19 and when the deaths actually occur. But now COVID-19 is of the top three causes of death in the United States. And what's interesting is that most of the deaths have occurred following the authorization of the vaccines. And this is due to a number of factors, and a big part of it is the politicization of this pandemic, you know, making it a political issue, and also just the lack of focus and investment in all of the other tools that we have, public health tools. So, you know, making sure that people have a way to get the vaccine easily, making sure that, you know, they trust who's, you know, talking to them about the vaccine. There's a lot of mistrust in our healthcare system, a lot of misinformation out there as well. And also recognizing that, you know, with these new variants, vaccination helps prevent, you know, the seriousness of the disease, but not the spread of it. So all the other pieces that are important for stopping the spread, quarantining, testing, protective equipment, all of that, as well as the social investment to make sure that people have what they need to be healthy and avoid infection during this time, that's been a big failure. I want to talk about a few other things that are in the news just quickly. Over the weekend, there were major protests in Minneapolis, Minnesota, following the murder of 22-year-old Amir Locke on February 2nd. Locke is a person with no criminal record, and the SWAT team did a no-knock warrant, had a key to his apartment, entered his apartment early in the morning on February 2nd, and within 10 seconds had shot him dead for no reason. You know, he was sleeping on the couch, and as he woke up, in 2 seconds, they killed him. So none of the officers that murdered Amir Locke are on disciplinary measures right now. And they do have a pretty bad history as police officers. Unicorn Riot has done a great expose on that. And so over the weekend on Saturday, there were 5,000 people out marching in the streets in protest. And on Sunday, a long car caravan that went to the chief of police's home to protest there. And of course, Minneapolis is where George Floyd was killed in 2020, and there were major protests at that point. Mexican workers at the GM plant in central Mexico had a landslide vote for a new union, and this is an independent union. There were several unions that they could choose from in that vote, and they chose the independent union, which is the National Auto Workers Union, got 78% of the vote. They had 88% of the workers voted in that. And this was seen as kind of a rejection of the corrupt unions that exist down there that are, you know, making negotiations and contracts without worker input. So there's a very strong movement down there to move to these independent unions. There are three other auto manufacturing plants that have also chosen independent unions, and they are having better benefits and better pay as a result of that. The Beijing Olympics, Winter Olympics, kicked off on February 4th, and the United States, of course, is engaging in a diplomatic boycott for so-called genocide and crimes against humanity. There's some excellent articles explaining why that is ridiculous and how this is just, again, politicizing something that shouldn't be politicized, because the United States has a national security strategy of great power conflict, and China is one of the great powers that the U.S. is seeking conflict with. And so China is calling for the U.S. to stop politicizing this. According to the Olympic Charter, sports are supposed to be a neutral institution. Looks like in Latin America, the Monroe Doctrine is really starting to unravel as more countries are creating alliances with Russia and China. And the most recent one is Argentina, where the President Fernandez met with the leaders of Russia and China, and cites the previous administrations that placed the country into a lot of debt through the International Monetary Fund, and how, you know, they need to turn away from the United States and the IMF because of the predatory way in which they behave, and start building these other alliances with other major powers. Argentina joins Nicaragua and Venezuela that also have strong relations with Russia and China. And then I want to point out a report by Mark Weisbrot of the Center for Economic Policy and Research on the U.S. sanctions on Afghanistan. He says that they're likely to be deadlier than the 20 years of war waged there by the United States. These sanctions that the United States is imposing are justified. Apparently, the U.S. says they're justified because of human rights abuses by the new government, the Taliban government. Of course, we could talk about human rights abuses here in the United States, but really, these illegal economic coercive measures are another deadly form of warfare. And Weisbrot says that 55% of the population, of the Afghanistan population, is experiencing high levels of food insecurity. Their currency is losing value. The prices are high. And the United States has basically seized over $9 billion of Afghanistan's money that's being held in the Federal Reserve. And that's about half of Afghanistan's total economy. Those dollars are really important because without U.S. dollars, countries are not able to do the trade that they need to trade, do to get goods imported into their country. So the war on Afghanistan is not over. It has just taken a new form that is just as deadly, if not deadlier, than the previous 20 years. And so we need to be aware of that. If you want to learn more about sanctions, you can check out the website sanctionskill.org. But let's go ahead then and turn to some of the speakers who spoke at this national online rally. The rally was also live streamed on the Popular Resistance Facebook page and is available as a YouTube if you want to see the entire rally on the Popular Resistance YouTube channel. But the first speaker that I want to highlight is Alice Loazia, and she is the vice president of the Task Force on the Americas. And she talks about Colombia in Latin America as a gateway for NATO into Latin America and the role that that country is playing in terms of giving the U.S. cover by conducting covert actions for the United States as well as training paramilitaries around the world and more. So I'll turn it over now to Alice.
Okay, thank you. Good morning. Good morning from the Bay Area, actually. I guess everybody would wonder why one would speak about Colombia in relation to NATO or in relation to the United States' threat on war on Russia. And it's very clear that Colombia is an important role. It's the only country in Latin America to be in NATO. It has relations with NATO since 2013, but they were solidified and formalized in 2018. And the United States needs Colombia. It's in a very strategic place at the top of South America, and not only serves as a NATO ally, but as an ally to the U.S. and the war efforts of the U.S. and the control of the U.S. of the South America and the Caribbean region. Colombia offers some really interesting things for NATO. Due to the militarization of Colombia by the United States since 2000 with Plan Colombia and an extremely, extremely well-trained surveillance and military police and paramilitary forces from Colombia. Colombia offers a lot of militarism and a lot of work that they can do covertly as well as overtly for the United States in wars like the one that's being threatened now. One of the things that they do is they offer military help, military aid, but they also offer one of the big things that Colombia offers is the covert actions and the mercenaries and the paramilitary actions that they do for the United States. And they do this, the United States pretending not to know anything about it, of course, because it's covert. And they use Colombia to intervene in many countries in the Middle East. They've trained people in the Middle East. They've been very linked with the Israeli government for their own training. They do a lot of work in Central America, training people in Central America. And a lot of the training that the Colombians do is training other countries how to use paramilitary actions, use human rights abuse without being signaled that the U.S. is doing this. So this is one of the things that Colombia does for the United States in these kinds of wars and will continue doing. The conditions in Colombia, of course, Colombia, what does the Colombia get out of this? Colombia gets quite a bit. They get their pockets full of money. They get free military and the ruling class gets all kinds of benefits from this. And so they promise to do this, and they also get a lot of help in repressing the Colombian social movements that are quite large and have been very large this past year. So Colombia is an important role in supporting the U.S. in this war against Russia. Thank you.
Next, I would like to turn to David Swanson. He's the co-founder and director of World Beyond War and the author of the book War is a Lie. And he talks about the whole propaganda that's going on being promoted by the corporate media around the escalation against Russia and how that's misleading people. So take it away, David.
Thank you, Margaret. Terrific job on this. The people inside the White House across the street from me here sometimes believe they can sell us what we don't want to buy. They've got a recipe for mixing up irresistible poisons. They do polling. They test out phrases on focus groups. They turn entire foreign governments into a single person and that person into Adolf Hitler. They say defense, democracy, and appeasement a lot. They restage group photos, bravely screening the murders of distant enemies. But sometimes they miscalculate. Sometimes it's the cumulative result of decades of spin from numerous administrations when even a good corporate reporter who wants to believe everything just can't stomach any longer the recycled lies that he's fallen for too many times before. And so they tell us that Russia's going to start a war in Nazi fashion with a false flag excuse, albeit against a U.S.-backed coup government with Nazi elements. And they tell us Russia did this 8 years ago and that there was no coup. And everyone accepts that, of course. I mean, who can remember anything from 8 years ago? We merely have recordings of them plotting the coup and photos of them handing out pastries to the protesters. Have they ever once brought us pastries? But they seem to have misjudged their own approved journalists in claiming that Russia is about to act because one of them, like Oliver Twist in the orphanage, humbly asking for a bit more food, eventually spoke up and said, "Sir, could we have just the slightest bit of evidence for your claims, please?" And the very concept of evidence seemed incomprehensible to them. And that seemed odd, even to people who believe Trump is Putin's slave and NATO is a charitable philanthropy. What if they're wrong about more than the ability to sail through without evidence? What if people are not impressed by photos of armchair killers watching families blown up? What if they're wrong, not only about the U.S. public wanting war with Russia? They know the U.S. public does not want war with Russia, at least not a war in which any people deemed to matter, that is, U.S. people, die. But what if they're also wrong that we want or will tolerate the reckless macho blustering and threatening that risks a war that risks nuclear war, a nuclear war that risks ending all life on Earth? What if they only consulted the same geniuses who told them to value the filibuster and bipartisan harmony over the lives of struggling people? What if we agree with them on the need to stand up strong and stop appeasing evil forces, but understand the evil forces that most need resistance not to be based in Moscow, but rather to be running Lockheed Martin, Boeing, Northrop Grumman, Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, The Washington Post, and toiling away in the U.S. government, dealing weapons around the globe, pushing for more and more bases and missiles, and insisting on the Eurasian pivot away from small-time terrorists to demonizable governments that are better for business? We need a Department for Defense against the warmongers. In its absence, we will have to do the job ourselves. Peace.
Next, I'd like to share the comments by Sarah Flounders of the International Action Center, and she talks about the importance of people's movements in making a difference in stopping wars and showing that, you know, we're refusing to go along with this media propaganda, and we're united in our refusal to believe that. So here's Sarah Flounders.
Well, thank you, Margaret. And I literally am on my way out the door for the demonstration that we're planning in New York today at Times Square, the Red Steps. But I'm glad you opened by talking about actions in 34 cities and 200 organizations and 800 other signers and all of that, because it is always a people's movement that makes the difference. And having a unified view that this is a United States government provocation, refusing to go along with the lies, saying no war with Russia in a united way is so important, because we are combating a really ruthless media in a really fabricated crisis and risking wider war. I mean, they just barely were thrown out of Afghanistan after 20 years of complete ruin and waste and destruction, and have left behind intentionally starvation and sanctions there. And they're on to the next war. And it's full of lies. You think of the endless number of maps saying why Russia has 100,000 troops threatening to invade Ukraine. Every one of those troops are within Russia. What faces them in NATO? NATO is today a U.S. commanded military force of 3.5 million soldiers. Literally, think about it, operating in constant war games, military operations, naval actions from the Black Sea to the Baltic Sea to the Mediterranean, nonstop, and bringing in more and more equipment. And all the promises not to expand NATO, they've more than doubled the size right to the borders of Russia. So we shouldn't forget who is the aggressor, who has violated the agreements, and who is pushing for wider war. And we need to look at the 800 U.S. military bases. Russia does have one military base in Syria. That's about it. So just looking at the comparisons, looking at the staged provocation, extremely dangerous. And I want to just take a second to say, yesterday, here's the opening of the Olympic Games in Beijing. And what's the U.S. response? A really shoddy publicity stunt in Syria, claiming that they're again going after terrorist forces. Six children die. But it's this endless publicity stunts of militarism. In closing, I also want to say that we can't say our government. We have to make demands on this government. We have a responsibility to make demands on this government. But the U.S. government today is a government of corporate billionaire power. The military and media corporations are really merged. And the both Republicans and Democrats are imperialist parties of war. They have a different social base. That's true. But when it comes to war, they have the same interests. And they unanimously vote again and again for the military budgets, for the bases, for the sanctions on a third of the world population. This is an aggressive combined Republican and Democrat that stands for war. And it's what we're up against. And it's why we need the greatest unity without illusions and a strong people's force coming from below.
Next, I'll bring in Anne Wright. Anne is a retired colonel and former State Department employee. She represents Code Pink, but she's also a member of Veterans for Peace. And she talks from Honolulu, Hawaii, the headquarters of the Indo-Pacific Military Command, and talks about the role that that is playing in bringing NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, is now being brought into the Western Pacific. And she really calls out and names the actors behind the current crisis with Russia.
Hey, Margaret, and aloha to everyone. Good morning. It's a little after 7 in the morning here. We actually had a big rally in Honolulu yesterday, and you see one of the signs that we had from it right up here. And I think it's, we did a good job on it, saying, you idiots, you idiot politicians, what the hell are you doing again trying to get us into another friggin' war? What in the world are you doing? I mean, I'm sitting out here and halfway across the Pacific at the headquarters of a command, a military command. We're talking really about Russia and NATO and the U.S. and Russia, but the military command here in Honolulu is the Indo-Pacific Command. And guess what they've done? They have invited NATO forces to come into the Western Pacific with the freedom of navigation, things that are going on in China's front yard. So around the world, the U.S. and its ally, NATO, is causing big trouble everywhere. And truly, it is up to us as citizens to keep after our government and tell them we do not want this. I mean, Joe Biden is going after the Ukraine and Russia from, 2014 and the U.S. coup in Ukraine that just resulted in the annexation by Russia at the request of the people in Crimea. But boy, that has really caused great tension for the last 8 years. And the Biden administration and all of its hangovers or leftovers from the Obama administration, including the evil Victoria Nuland, one of the coup makers in Ukraine, and Jake Sullivan, and Secretary of State, and I would say of Defense also, Anthony Blinken. I mean, all of them are warmongers, and we must push back hard. And there are so many places to push back. I mean, if you just look at all of the places. So I went into my little library here, and what else are we worried about? You know, here we are, no war with Iran. How old is this thing? And I'll just mention, we've got Move On right here. And as Medea Benjamin wrote, we've got to get the progressive element of the Democratic Party to challenge the warmonger Democrats, because they and the Republicans are saying, fine, let's just go to war over Russia. Let's just put all sorts of people into Poland, into Ukraine. Let's put multiple ships out in the Western Pacific. I mean, these guys and gals are just plain warmongers. And so here we go with another sign. This was another one, no war on Russia. And I would just say, to add to it, let's just do no war on anyone. With that, aloha, and write your newspapers, write your congressmen and women, and demand that they stop this warmongering. And let's flood the White House with its little contact thing that we'll put in here. Flood them with all sorts of emails. No war, no more on anyone. Thank you.
With that, why don't we take a short music break? And this is a song composed and performed by Ben Groskop. It's called NATO's Got to Go. And I actually played part of the previous recording of this song in my last program when I interviewed Ajamu Baraka. But Ben Groskop reworked the song, has a new music video out on YouTube about it, and he performed it during the national rally on Saturday. And he has some introductory remarks.
Thank you so much, Margaret. As she mentioned, this did emerge from street actions. I do believe that songs, ideally, they emerge out of the movement. And this is a song that did that as we were mobilizing in the spring of 2019 to oppose NATO at the meetings that were taking place in Washington, D.C. And this song borrows a melody from the African-American spiritual Joshaphat, the Battle of Jericho. And peace activists have used this melody before. In the 1970s, singers in the anti-nuke movement created a song that said, "We say the nukes have got to go." More recently, Charlie King sang, "We say the drones have got to go." This song is, "We say NATO's got to go." And today, we understand that NATO is a key threat to world peace. And as a peace movement, we must confront that threat. Thank you, Margaret, for sharing it now.
Kosovo to Afghanistan, to the fractured Libyan shore, the bureaucrats of NATO feed the hungry gods of war. They say that we're in danger, that's why we need more arms, but the threat of climate chaos doesn't seem to raise alarm. We say NATO's got to go, got to go, got to go.
You're listening to Clearing the Fog, speaking truth to expose the forces of greed on listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. I'm Margaret Flowers.
And now I continue with excerpts of talks that were given at the National Online Rally to Stop War with Russia over Ukraine that occurred on February 5th of this year on Saturday. And this was a rally that was convened by 12 major national and international anti-war organizations in the United States who drafted a unified call to action to do a variety of actions to stop war with Russia. And you can read that call to action, find out about the actions that are going on, as well as sign the petition at popularresistance.org/NoWarWithRussia. So next up is Rafiki Morris, and Rafiki is representing the Black Alliance for Peace. He really puts a human face on war and talks about the bigger picture of this current conflict, of the, you know, United States violence and aggression around the world, and who is impacted the most by that. So this is Rafiki Morris.
Well, thank you very much for having us, and we're overwhelmed and about a response so far to this call to stop the war against Russia. The Black Alliance for Peace would like to make a few quick statements. First of all, we think it's important to put a human face on war. We are told about war as if it's something that is taking place somewhere else that involves somebody else, and that is about meeting U.S. natural interests. But the truth is that war is about people dying, families being destroyed. It's about cultures being ravished. It's about children being left homeless and being killed and murdered. It's about creating an environment where bombs and bullets are active elements of your atmosphere. And we think that it's really important that people understand what is in fact taking place and who are these players. They would have us think that this is some conflict between Biden and Putin, but it is really a conflict between the U.S. and the world. It's the United States government that is fostering wars all over the world, and they're using, as they have in the past, their lap dogs and attack dogs called NATO. We talk about NATO as if it is some congenial grouping of nations looking out for the best interests of folks in the North Atlantic. But NATO is a mercenary army. NATO is a U.S. mercenary army that is paid by the U.S. to do their bidding all over the world. Today, it is the Ukraine. Yesterday, it was Libya. And tomorrow, who knows who it will be? We know this because we have witnessed their continued attacks on humanity, and we see it happening over and over again. They manufacture an excuse to kill other people. Manufacture it, just make it up. And then they use the media to justify these fantasies that they create. The U.S. providing intelligence to NATO is crazy. It's just insane. This is the same people who provided us with the intelligence that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. This is the same people who provided the intelligence that Muammar Gaddafi was killing his own people. And this intelligence, this red flag that they wave to justify pursuing their natural, what they call their national interests, is something that humanity has got to come to grips with and understand that this is not about protecting the people of the Ukraine. We have a lot of problems with this situation. We remember the coup in the Ukraine. We remember the U.S. financing of this illegal regime. And now they're coming to use their relationship with an illegal regime that they put in power to justify the whole world being embroiled in what could potentially be a disastrous war that could end humanity. So for us, the other thing that is very important is that Black people need to understand that this is about the same people who are responsible for our suffering all over the world. The same people who put these bombs, are threatening bombs in Ukraine, are today firing rockets all over Africa through AFRICOM. They're fostering war in the Middle East through CENTCOM, and they even have a SPACECOM. So when we come to these rallies, we think it's important that we explain to people who are the forces at work, what are they trying to achieve, and who's going to benefit from it. And we think it is only the people who are organized who can stop this war. So our slogan is organize, organize, organize. We need to understand that the war has never stopped. Yes, they left Afghanistan, but we have coup d'etats all over West Africa today. We have war still raging in the Middle East. And now we're going to start a war in Europe. The United States government is the only folks that are responsible for what's happening in the Ukraine. And we think it's time for people to stand up. We think it's time for people to organize. We think it's time for people to recognize that the interests of the people of America and the interests of the U.S. government are two entirely different things. And if we do not organize to defend our interests will not be defended. Thank you very much. And we're once again glad to be here and participate in this historic gathering of peace organizations. We need to be together like this all the time so that we can continue to fight this ongoing threat against human life. Thank you.
Next is Leela Anand is the Southern Regional Coordinator for the ANSWER Coalition, Act Now to Stop War and End Racism. She talks about the Pentagon military and NATO spending, how much is being spent, and how NATO is surrounding and provoking Russia, and how this puts us at risk of a real risk of nuclear war. So this is Leela Anand.
Hello, everybody. My name is Leela Anand. I think that our activity today and the other actions that are taking place around the country, including the protests in front of the White House, are of the greatest urgency. It's imperative that the people of this country go into the streets. We must sound the alarm. We must let our coworkers, our neighbors, our friends, our families, our fellow students become fully aware that the government that speaks in our name, the government that spends our tax dollars, is engaged in actions in Ukraine and at the Russian border that are not only dangerous and not only provocative, but they're setting the stage for a possible war that could envelop an entire region and indeed the entire world. The United States government spends more than 10 times what Russia spends each year on its military. The United States spends almost $800 billion a year. And that's just the Department of Defense spending. When you look at the Department of Energy and other agencies, the real number of U.S. military spending is somewhere in the neighborhood of $1 trillion. Remember, that's every single year. And the countries that constitute NATO, a U.S.-led military alliance, together spend $1.7 trillion per year on death and destruction. That's $1.7 trillion for military expenditures. The United States and NATO countries have pushed the NATO military alliance steadily closer to Russia and have incorporated former Soviet republics and other key Soviet and Russian allies in Eastern and Central Europe into its military alliance. Now they're putting troops and advanced weapons, and soon these weapons will include advanced intermediate range missiles that directly threaten Russia. The Russian government has made it clear that these are red lines for Russia. They're putting their foot down. They're telling the United States and NATO, we will never allow you to place weapons, including missiles with a flight time of 2 or 3 or 5 minutes to their targets in Ukraine or at our border. When the Russians made it explicitly clear that this was unacceptable, and amassed Russian soldiers inside of Russia, NATO and the United States accused Russia of being the provocateurs and the perpetrators of aggression. One might only consider for a moment what the United States' reaction would be if Russia placed advanced weapons and missiles at the U.S.-Mexican border or the U.S.-Canadian border. Russian missiles with a flight time of 5 minutes to hit Chicago or New York or Washington, D.C. Asking the question answers it. The U.S. would be prepared to engage in all-out war against Russia. In fact, this is precisely what happened in 1962 when the Soviets placed intermediate-range tactical weapons in Cuba. It was only because the Soviets ultimately decided to withdraw those missiles that the world narrowly averted a thermonuclear war that could well have extinguished life on the planet as we know it. The U.S. anti-war movement must reject the demonization of Russia, because demonization is nothing other than a public relations tool designed to generate public support for a new war. Let's never forget that it was precisely this tool of demonization that was used in preparation for the catastrophic invasion of Iraq. Finally, the people of this country need decent paying jobs, affordable housing, affordable and I should say free healthcare services. They need education, and it should be free for working class young people. The people of this country, in fact, need the government to change course. We need money for jobs, education, housing, healthcare, not for another catastrophic war. But the reality is that this government will only listen to the dictates of the generals and the military industrial complex and capitalist corporations that profit from war. Unless we build a massive movement at the grassroots that changes the political climate and creates sufficient pressure that can lead to an end to this current crisis and to end once and for all the danger posed by a government that is addicted to endless war. So thank you. And we join with all of you in building this activity and in all of the other manifestations of protest and opposition in the coming days and weeks. Thank you.
Now we have Henry Lowendorf representing the U.S. Peace Council, and he talks about the fact that people in the United States don't want another war.
Thank you, Margaret. The people want peace. We want relief from COVID. We want healthy food, clean water, affordable housing. We want debt-free education, decent jobs at livable wages, and we want all the rights guaranteed by the United Nations. The one thing we don't want is more war. No war on Russia, no war on Ukraine, no war on China, no wars in Africa and Latin America. The peace movement must be visible. 20 years of war in Afghanistan, what did it get us? Death of Afghans, death of Americans, millions wounded, refugees, vast destruction, corrupt government, democracy? No. And now starvation made in the USA. The other wars, Iraq, Libya, Syria, Yemen, Somalia, and so many others. Same destruction, more death. An unimaginable fortune, $21 trillion, squandered by the greatest purveyor of violence in the world, madness. All that the people wanted and needed, healthcare, education, housing, an end to inequality and racism, could have been ours, squandered. Who benefits from war? The makers of weapons, the death merchants. Even the threat of war boosts their profits. The biggest death contractors are Lockheed Martin, Raytheon Technologies, General Dynamics, Boeing, Northrop Grumman. The CEO of Raytheon is salivating. These guys are big and powerful. The only way we stop them is united action by a united peace movement and all the social justice movements. United action, street heat. Biden is provoking war in far-off Ukraine against far-off Russia to promote the expansion of a vicious military alliance, NATO, that few understand. The corporate media, New York Times, Washington Post, CNN, Fox, etc., regurgitate Washington's propaganda, never doubting. We doubt. We say no to NATO expansion. We say no to NATO. No military alliances. Unite for peace. As the 20th century waned, the worst warmongers gathered to create a plan for the new American century, a plan for the future of imperialism. They called the United States to build full-spectrum dominance. It demanded control over every aspect of our lives, military, economic, political, diplomatic, cultural. Control by whom? By big corporations, by the death merchants, by the money speculators, by imperialism. Dominance that could not be challenged by any other country or any other people, no matter where they were. But the people united can't be defeated. The death merchants promote wars and Biden is their salesman, just as his predecessors sold war, just as most of Congress is selling and buying war. They promote the giant oil companies, ExxonMobil, Shell, BP, Chevron, to save the planet from war and overheating the peace movement. All the social justice movements must unite. George W. Bush, Barack Obama, Donald Trump, and Joe Biden, war presidents. The wars wrecked the invaded countries. The wars wrecked the people of the U.S. In 2014, President Obama understood that China's economy was quickly growing to challenge full spectrum dominance while the U.S. was squandering treasure in the Middle East. He proclaimed the U.S. had to pivot to Asia to contain China's rise. His administration engineered a violent coup in Ukraine to contain Russia's rise. So again, we now confront more wars, wars to subvert China and Russia, with our demands for the real peace dividend, a healthy global community, a healthy planet. No to wars for full spectrum dominance. Unite for peace. Unite that the world's resources stop bleeding us and feeding the billionaires and oligarchs. Unite for our humanity and our billions of brothers and sisters on this earth, our only home. Thank you.
Next, we have Bruce Gagnon, and Bruce is the head of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. This is an international organization, and Bruce has visited Ukraine and Russia and has connections to the social movements there. So he talks a lot about the U.S.-backed coup that occurred in 2014. Of course, that was the Obama-Biden administration, and the attacks within Ukraine on ethnic Russians and the Nazis there that the United States is funding, training, and arming.
Thanks to all. What a great turnout and great speeches by everybody. I went to Odessa in 2016. You should know in 2014, the people of Eastern Ukraine, after the coup, the new government that U.S. installed announced that the speaking of Russian in Ukraine would be illegal. So the people of Eastern Ukraine, predominantly Russian-speaking, Russian ethnic Ukrainian citizens, began collecting referendum signatures and having peaceful marches, saying they wanted a federated Ukraine where they could make decisions about what language and who their local elected officials would be, rather than having this new Nazi-installed government in Kiev make those decisions for them. And so at the Trades Union Hall in Odessa in 2014, there's a park there, people, a lot of traffic, people walking through, people were collecting signatures, and a huge number of Nazis were brought in on a train, and they attacked this place. People ran inside the Trades Union Hall to look for safety, and the Nazis began throwing Molotov cocktails. Soon there was fire. People came to the windows because the smoke inside was killing them. And there were there's videos everywhere about this. Guys outside shooting at them. Some people jumped from the building. And when they hit the ground, they were beaten by Nazis with baseball bats and rods. Nobody was ever found guilty. The only people that ever went to jail were people that were inside the Trades Hall that were that somehow escaped with their life. In 2016, myself and a few other Americans went there at the request of the mothers of the victims of that massacre. And as we were moving to the site, the Azov battalion was throwing rocks at the bus we were in. And then when we got there, the Azov battalion, the Nazis, blocked off the entrance to the Trades Union Hall. We couldn't go in. So I've seen these guys. I've been near them, and they're for real. They're bad news, and that's who the U.S. is supporting. I want to say that U.S. envisions NATO as a global alliance to replace the U.N. Because of the U.N. Security Council, Russia, China, other countries can block the U.S. and NATO when they now come in there asking for support for regime change and invasions of other places. And so that's not working out for Washington, London, and Brussels. So they're envisioning a global NATO alliance that they can then say, look, we have this legitimate international organization. So this is really what they're up to. I want to remind you that in Romania and Poland, the U.S. has installed two missile launch bases that can fire first strike attack Tomahawk cruise missiles that are nuclear capable that would reach Moscow and, more importantly, command control centers inside of Russia, their military bases, et cetera, et cetera. So this is indeed a Cuban Missile Crisis in reverse. So when Putin complains about this, when Moscow complains about this, it's a legitimate complaint. The, as you all know, SIPRI, the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, annually looks at military spending. It was earlier said the U.S. spends about $1.2 trillion a year. Russia spends $65 billion. Now, we're told by the media, by Washington, that Putin wants to recreate the former Soviet Union. He wants to take back all of Eastern Europe. Well, can he do that with $65 billion military appropriation? And when you add NATO countries' military spending to the U.S. total, it's well over 60% of the global total. So just one more lie. And finally, it was mentioned that NATO is creating a space command. That's indeed true. And what they're doing is they bring in new NATO members and partners around the world. They require them to replace all of their military equipment with equipment that is called interoperable. That means it fits into the U.S. warfighting technology system, which gives the U.S. control of the tip of the spear, because the U.S. is the only country within NATO that has this massive international system of downlink stations that communicate with the satellites in real time, split second time, relay signals, surveillance, targeting, the whole works. So the U.S. then is using NATO to create this, in their mind, undefeatable space technology system that can control the earth below on behalf of corporate globalization, corporate capitalism, and also control the pathway on and off the earth, as countries now are talking about going out and mining the sky for precious resources and minerals, which would violate the Outer Space Treaty and the Moon Treaty. So we're in a difficult period. I'm really heartened to see everybody on this call today. We're going out on the street today at 3 o'clock here in the mid-coast of Maine. Keep going, everybody. Thank you very much.
Now I bring in Susan Schnall. She's the current president of Veterans for Peace. Susan was actually court-martialed because of her anti-war resistance during the Vietnam War, where she served as a nurse. And she talks about the veterans' opposition to war.
Thank you, Margaret, and thank you for inviting Veterans for Peace. And again, a reminder to all of us that we veterans have been to war, we've seen death and destruction, and we come out ever more strongly today to say the United States should stop its march towards war in the Ukraine and with Russia. We remember the beginning of World War I, the mobilization of armies joined by dozens of agreements between nations that led to over 40 million civilian and military deaths. Today, we have NATO that was formed to ensure that any attack against one ally is going to be an attack against all. And so we have, once again, a march towards war. And we in the United States are the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today. We Americans leave our trail of destruction in over 150 countries across the world. Our corporate greed, our economic imperialism, the militarism of the United States economy knows no bounds. I know that I'm speaking to all of you who will agree that we need to wake up the people of this country. We are at war in this country, on this land. We are killing our children. We have become the monster in the world that produces more armaments, as we just heard from Bruce Gagnon, more battleships, more drones that annihilate whole communities with the push of a button. We destroy our young. We kill school children with impunity. We poison our water and food supply. We give the wealthy everything, great economic wealth and political power, so they can grab more opportunities for power and money. While we starve the poor so that we can go to war, We denigrate them with substandard housing, substandard education, lack of decent job opportunities, and then offer a way out by joining the military. So we may no longer have a countrywide draft, but we do have an economic draft. And that is very relevant to those of us in Veterans for Peace. We arm the police departments with military weapons that destroy and kill. There is no trial necessary for the poor and disadvantaged. We need to put the needs of people and the needs of the planet first. I'd like to also mention a quote by Thich Nhat Hanh, who speaks about veterans as the light of the tip of the candle, illuminating the way for the whole nation. If veterans can achieve awareness, transformation, understanding, and peace, they can share with the rest of society the realities of war. And they can teach us how to make peace with ourselves and with each other so that we no longer use violence to resolve conflicts. So I would say again, as an organization of veterans who have been to war, participated in it, now come home to say it is time to stop.
Next is Joe Lombardo. He's the head of the United National Anti-War Coalition, and he talks about the current unity within the peace movement.
Hello, everybody. It's great to be here. It was really encouraging to me when a number of peace organizations got together just a week or so ago to put together this common statement that we all signed on to against a war with Russia, pointing the finger where it belonged at the United States, and then within a week have put together demonstrations in dozens of cities around the country leading up to today, specifically on today, and a few that will happen in the days to come. I think this is a very important achievement on our part. You know, the hypocrisy of the United States and the lies are just so thick that even the media is having a difficult time. This docile American media, which is just reports what the State Department says as if it is the news, is having a hard time to even accept it. First of all, Russia is the aggressor, because Russia has troops massed in its own country, on its own border. If you listen to the news media, they always say it's on the Ukrainian border. They don't say it's in Russian territory and on the Russian border. But it is the United States that has military all over the world in about 172 countries, about 20 times the number of foreign military bases as all other countries in the world combined. And in the past decades, it has invaded and occupied one country after the next. And yet it is Russia that is the aggressor. They say there's about 100,000 troops in Russia on the Russian side of the border, but they don't tell you that there's about 150,000 Ukrainian troops with U.S. quote unquote advisors with modern U.S. weapons that have just been upped the amount of weapons to the Ukrainians on and in the border with Donbas and around the Russian border. They don't tell you that. They don't say that there are about 300,000 U.S. troops in Europe. They don't say that we have held military maneuvers right on the border with Russia. And that's not aggressive. That's defensive. That we have missiles right on the border with Russia. So why does Russia have some troops on its side of the border? Well, Ukraine has the largest border of any European country with Russia. The United States made a pledge to Russia when the Soviet Union was collapsing. It said it would never move west of Germany with NATO into the so-called Warsaw Pact countries, which were allies of the Soviet Union, or into the former Soviet states. It is now in 14 of them, and that's why it can have these maneuvers and missiles and troops right on the border. It is the U.S. that is aggressive.
So that's all I have for today. I hope that you found this informative. You know, it's so important that we get this information so that we can counter the lies that are being told. As I said at the beginning of the program, we are being lied into another war. But this is a war with a major power, with a nuclear armed state.
You've been listening to Clearing the Fog, Speaking Truth to Expose the Forces of Greed on Pacifica Radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City.